Rally the Valley. Rally the Valley.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, I have been, I am fully on the bandwagon of the Phoenix Suns, as is most of the Valley right now. Joining us now is Doug Franz. He is with the Doug and Wolf Show. All right, so Doug, let's talk about these Phoenix Suns. What do you make of the sweep?
Never saw that coming. That's a level of domination in basketball that just is not normal.
Even with the injuries that the Nuggets had, they still, to lose all four games, and last night was the closest of the four. The other ones were not even close in the middle of the third quarter.
To me, it's more, I get the injuries, but they're still the number three seed in the West, and Jamal Murray's been gone for a long time. So people that want to talk about how it would have been different with Jamal Murray, well, you know, it's if Jamal Murray gets hurt game one, that's a major topic. He didn't get hurt game one. You still made it to the three seed. You still made it past the first round. So now using the Jamal Murray thing as an excuse. Why didn't you play hard for three games? This team, the Nuggets, didn't start playing hard until Jokic got ejected.
Right. And then they were a different team.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's on them.
But look at the maturity of the Phoenix Suns to fight. They were it was a hostile crowd, except there were a lot of Suns fans there, but a hostile crowd, hostile environment. Jokic gets ejected from the game. The Nuggets get really start playing much better, and yet the Suns never lost that lead.
No.
And it was down to two, but they never
lost. That's the magic of Chris Paul. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. This is going to shock you. Wednesday is the 7-month anniversary of the trade. He's only been a Sun for 7 months, and look at what he's done. This has everything to do with Chris Paul.
One of the coolest things I saw post-game, a couple of things. First of all, was Chris Paul acknowledging all of the Suns fans in the arena. It was a very cool picture. But hearing Monty Williams talk about his relationship with Chris Paul, and was it those two pieces? Are those the two key pieces of what switched this thing around?
I mean, yes, 100% yes, but there's still always going to be the buildup. Devin Booker got hurt a long time ago with a right wrist injury, and he basically retaught himself how to play the game left-handed. Didn't sit around waiting for his wrist to get healthy. This was years ago, but that's made him much more unguarded. The bringing in of Monty Williams signaled to the rest of the league, we're finally taking this seriously. We're not getting a young head coach that you don't have to pay very much money to that has no authority in the room. We're getting an established person who isn't going anywhere. Monty Williams is the first head coach in Devin Booker's pro career that was his head coach for two straight years, beginning of the season to the end. And Devin Booker was a 2015 draft pick. So it's the stability that's been brought. But Chris Paul brought a competitiveness and an attitude that you just can't recreate. And then you throw in at Jay Crowder, who's absolutely fearless. And this is now officially a championship caliber team. I'm not saying they're going to win it, but they are good enough to be a champion.
Will they be favored against either team in the next round, or was it because the Clippers are the lower seed? They were not the favorite against the Lakers, but will they be favored in the next round?
I think they will against the Jazz. I don't think they will against the Clippers. And that has to do with just Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are really, really good. But the Jazz are a better team. The Clippers have better players, but the Jazz are a better team. And I think team ball matters, and the Suns have shown that.
They sure have. And again, I'm a very casual basketball fan, but watching the way they play together and play for each other is so encouraging to see. They seem like they're not sharing the ball because they have to. They're looking to get each other involved. And when someone's having an off night or an off quarter, there's other people that are picking up the slack and vice versa. It's great to watch.
There's a magic connection between their stars and everybody else. You know, and that's when you know how good you can be, because Chris Paul has no problem giving the ball to anybody to score. And Devin Booker recognizes when other people are hot. And yet you still have the coach. Like I think everybody should love the player campaign. But sometimes campaign gets too excited and and he drives too often and he doesn't create for other people, because that's what he's used to, of being the main guy off the bench. And now that he's getting more playing time, it's like, wait a minute, Cam, do you realize Devin Booker didn't even touch the ball in this possession? But the person that's saying that is Monty Williams. Devin Booker's not jumping up and down whining, where's the ball, where's the ball? I should get the ball. You shouldn't be allowed to shoot. He lets the coach take care of it like it should happen.
And it looks like when you watch Chris Paul on the floor, when things start to get a little tighter in the game, his enthusiasm, but also his leadership, kind of gets all those young players involved, and they all believe. You looked at their faces; they never looked like they were losing confidence.
The big compliment, and this is going to sound out of nowhere, is to a lot of the parents of those players and the coaching staff for creating an environment of being coachable. Because there's been a lot of places where Chris Paul has been not a failure, but hasn't been as good. And the truth is, it's not his fault. It's guys didn't want to hear it. Who are you to tell me that I need to do that? Why should I care what you think? I need to get my points so I can get what I want and contract time. The Suns have about 7, 8, 9 guys who do nothing but listen to Chris Paul and Monty Williams. They're so coachable, they're so lacking in ego, that's why they have a chance to win a championship.
And there's a unique combination in professional athletes, and I know you're more familiar than I am. The great ones seem to have the combination of humility, where they're coachable, but the confidence to know that when the ball is in their hand, they have the complete confidence in getting the job done. That's unique. Usually there's a lot of ego involved, or you get one or the other, but there's a unique quality in them, like you said, that they're both. They are confident, supremely confident, but coachable.
And you have to ask the question, why wouldn't you be? I mean, are you really that arrogant to think you know everything, that somebody couldn't help your game? And a great example is, there's a player on the Nuggets named Michael Porter Jr. Mm-hmm. They lost in the playoffs last year, and he was asked why, and he said, because I didn't get the ball enough. Oh.
Yeah.
So this year, Jamal Murray's hurt. Michael Porter Jr., it could have been all about you, and he did everything he could to make it about him. But there's one thing. He's just a gunner. He's not a good basketball player. He's a good shooter at times, but he only cares about his own shot. That brings everybody down.
From your perspective of being in the sports broadcasting business, the Suns were picked by everyone to lose in the first round, the vast majority in the second round. But it seems like with every one of these games and in every one of these series, now they've won 6 straight playoff games. Was it 6?
7. Yeah.
7 straight. Yeah. That they are starting to get the national respect. Barkley last night was saying that Chris Paul should have been the MVP. Do you think they're finally starting to get national respect?
Kyrie Irving, a player for the Nets, got hurt yesterday. And I don't root for injuries, but mm-hmm. once he went down, I think it made the Suns the best team in basketball right now. I think the Nets, when healthy, are. But I think the Suns are now the best team in the NBA.
What's their weak spot? What's their weak point?
Backcourt defense. Chris Paul and Devin Booker aren't great defenders, and Utah is the type of team that can expose that. So playing Utah will be tough because they've got great three-point shooters. The Clippers have better individual players, but the Clippers wouldn't have home court advantage. So if the Suns play the Clippers, you get game one in Phoenix. If the Suns play the Jazz, game one is in Salt Lake City.
The Jazz are pretty known for that in their organization, though, right? They've always been a fundamentally good team.
Very true.
All the way back. I mean, yep. You know, and so I think that's kind of their reputation. But the Suns seem so much more athletic than the Denver Nuggets. I mean, just from a casual observer standpoint, they just look like they ran around and over the Denver Nuggets. Can they do that to either one of the next two teams?
No, the Clippers are great athletes, and the Jazz, if There's a term called Y ball, meaning you go to the YMCA and you play pickup basketball.
Right.
And when you're young, like 17, 18, you get lined up against these upper 30, 40-year-old guys that you think can't play, and they've got knee pads and bandanas, and they shoot you right out of the gym. That's Utah.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the problem, is they don't look athletic at all, and suddenly you're down by 15 and you don't even know it.
As always, I appreciate the time. It's great to talk with someone who knows the game. I'm just such a casual fan, but I appreciate the time.
Oh, no problem. Go Suns.
All right. Doug Franz joins us for a few moments. And coming up in just a minute or two, we're going to talk about we might start losing your unemployment money. What does that mean? Stick around.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. We're talking about unemployment on the Mike Broomhead Show. 4 states are cutting off federal dollars. Arizona was one of the states that jumping on board with getting rid of or not taking the federal dollars and putting it toward unemployment. and for unemployment compensation for people. We have so many jobs that are available here in the state of Arizona that we're taking away the incentive for people to stay home. And I think, to be honest with you, I think that's a shame that we have to do that. I've talked about hard work, and it sounds like such a cliche, but it isn't. We live in a day and age that if you really want something, and that's the great thing about this country. It's one of the, when I talk about immigrants, one of the reasons why I have such a love for legal immigrants to this country is watching and hearing the stories of people that persevere. We're not talking about immense wealth, but what we are talking about is the American dream, home ownership. How many of us remember what it's like to buy a home, what it feels like to own a home? And you may have a mortgage, but to have something that is yours, that is the piece of the American dream for many people that is only achievable in a place like this. There are people that have come here, again, my friends from Cuba, that communist country where you don't own anything. When the family that I knew, when they left with their three little girls and they got on a boat and they came to the U.S. in the 70s, I didn't meet them until the early 80s, but the late 1970s when they came to this country, do you know that the parents had to leave their wedding rings because everything of value belongs to the state? So the gold and the diamonds or whatever would be in those wedding rings were left because anything of value belongs to the state. Imagine them only allowing you to leave with just the clothes on your back. You work your entire life as an adult and you've got nothing. You leave there with absolutely nothing. So here we have a country where you can accomplish anything you want if you put your mind to it. Now we have an economy that's growing again. We have an economy where people are getting back to work. I had a great conversation with somebody about this earlier this morning that said a lot of times it's employers that treat their employees like dirt. So there's a lot of people not very motivated to get back to work. There's two schools of thought there. I absolutely acknowledge that that's true. And this is a time where bad employers suffer because when you have options, and that's what I love about a booming economy. This is why we should allow businesses to control the economy and not the government. And I mean this sincerely, because at a time when this is a seller's market for employment, when you are selling your trade, you're selling your skill set, you're selling your work ethic to someone, if you're working for an employer that doesn't appreciate you, you don't have to stay there anymore. During a bad economy, you're stuck. People are stuck in a dead-end job or stuck working for a boss that doesn't appreciate them or a boss that takes credit for their work, and you're not stuck. In a thriving economy, you have options. And that's where I think bad employers have got to change their ways, and good employers have to be better, and they want to be better. They offer better benefit packages, incentives to come on board, incentives to stay. Those are the things that I think are great. The unemployment thing that's happening right now is starting to stymie our economy, and it is sad. I'm not blaming everything on poor work ethic. There are some other extenuating circumstances, but we do know that there are people out there that genuinely are not going back to work because they can make a living sitting at home. No one should be able to make a living sitting at home. We have a duty, I believe, as individuals, a government to a certain extent, but as individuals, as people, we have an obligation to care for people that can't care for themselves. And I mean that sincerely. It is, I think, what makes us best as human beings, to be able to reach out to someone at a time where they can't care for themselves, whether it's through an injury or through a circumstance or through age or through a physical condition, whatever it is. That we reach out to people when they can't take care of themselves and we help care for them until they can. I think in human nature, that is one of the best things about who we are. I want you to think about the times in your life that you have felt the most fulfilled. And I would guarantee you, you can connect it to doing something good and kind for someone else. And if not, I would encourage you to find a way to do that. Because there is, all of our issues are real to us. We all have issues. You know, the old saying is, I complained that I didn't have any shoes until I met a man that didn't have any feet. There's some reality in that, but there's also reality in the fact that you don't have shoes. Whatever those issues are for you are real. But when you can help someone else in spite of your troubles, it eases the pain of your troubles. There's just something miraculous about it. And that's the society we should be. But when you are paying people to stay home, and human nature now is Why should I go back to work when I can make more money doing this? It's dangerous for our society. I used the analogy last week of the World War II generation, our greatest generation. It wasn't just winning the war. It was post-war and industrializing and building the United States of America, a solid foundation for all generations that followed to build on. And they've done an excellent job. We have been handed a mantle that we've got to care for. And I hope that the generation of children that we're raising and grandchildren that we're raising understand the hard work of the generations before them, and they want to exceed it. They want to do better. And I think that unemployment without an end is not good for anyone. President Biden is meeting Vladimir Putin this week. We're going to give you a preview of what that looks like and an analogy of people are saying what it's related to. I don't think it's necessarily true, but we're going to talk about that next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Back in the 1980s, a summit between what was then called the Soviet Union, the USSR, and the American president would be a big deal because Russia, the Russians at the time, the Soviet Union, was a superpower. They aren't anymore. The Russian Empire, the USSR, fell apart because of the Cold War and Ronald Reagan. I've talked about this earlier this morning. And Reagan was seen by a lot of Americans, and it was reported, if you go back and look at some of the stories and how it was reported, that Ronald Reagan daring to stand up to and challenge face-to-face Mikhail Gorbachev was making him look as if he was too much of a cowboy. That with the mutually assured destruction of nuclear war between the two nations, that challenging them that this would be that we would have mutually assured destruction. And Ronald Reagan had a policy back then of peace through strength. And I think that that saying was one that still resonates very well with people. I'm in no way, shape, manner, or form a vigilante. I'm not looking for trouble. I don't want trouble, but I want to be prepared if trouble finds me, that there is peace through strength, that if you know that coming, you better come at me with everything you have. And I'm not some world class world beater. It's not what I'm saying. But if you're going to break into my house, you should know that you are going to be met with force. And I think that when you have that kind of force, when people realize that you're not to be trifled with, there is peace there. They may not have respect, but when there's no respect, fear is a great motivator. And there was no respect between the U.S. and Russia, between the USSR and America. And by the way, the punchline to that whole story is that Reagan won the Cold War with the prediction he was right about. Our economy would win in the end when it came to the arms race. But for anybody that doesn't think that there was a world leader respect by Mikhail Gorbachev for Ronald Reagan, Mikhail Gorbachev sat next to Margaret Thatcher at Reagan's funeral. And he paid his respects because they were adversaries in the worldwide governments. But there was a mutual respect because he would not be walked on. Reagan would not be walked on by the Soviet Union. I preface all of this because our president is getting ready to meet with Vladimir Putin. It's a different Russia. Russia was described by the late John McCain as a glorified gas station now, that oil is their economy. But this is where foreign policy gets dicey for people. And this is where we think in terms of partisan politics. And I have really converted my thoughts in many ways to policies, because energy independence is national security. After 9/11, we realized that. The Russian government, Vladimir Putin, has attached himself to enemies of the United States, the Chinese government, as though not military enemies necessarily, though they are the world superpower. What they are doing in Taiwan is very similar to what the Russians did in Ukraine. And we are seeing policies in place of takeover. Also, the Russian influence in Syria and what's going on there with Bashar Assad. And when you look at what's going on in the worldwide governments, we have to play a role in foreign policy. The Russian government is not the same threat to us they were in the 1980s, but they have flexed their muscles with cyber warfare. And let's be honest, it's been connected to the Russians in a few different ways, that they hacked into the pipelines, they've hacked into that meat packing plant, the meat producer that's the biggest in the world. And it wasn't the Russian government per se, but it was Russian assets that were doing these things. And we are looking at a war, so to speak, but a cyber war that we may not be up to the task for, or we're facing an adversary that is equal to us, not militarily anymore. But the meeting between these two world leaders, which direction will it go? And that is to me, a big, big thing to be looked at. What will these negotiations be like? What will these conversations be like? One of the big stories today that I talked about was that Putin says that Biden is an oil friend as the U.S. falls behind, that we have regenerated the economy of the Russian people because our aversion to pulling oil out of the ground ourselves and refining oil ourselves, we are now allowing foreign governments to export more oil, and it's enriching that country. That country was in the basement economically when oil prices were down. We weren't buying their exports as much, and so now we were seeing their economy spiral down. Well, now they're getting emboldened and they're getting strengthened, and is that something that's good for America? And I'll mention for clarification's sake for everybody else that on the left, do you believe that the Russians influenced the American election 4.5 years ago? You believe that? You believe that Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton because of Russian influence? Doesn't matter what the Mueller report says. It doesn't matter what anybody else says, that the Russian government has influenced the American election to the point that it changed the presidential election. You believe that? Well, if that's what the Russians are, why are we going to be on any level in bed with them? I mean, I look at that and I think you want to bring them back into the G7. You want to bring them back into in line where other governments are negotiating. That's one thing. But what happens in this one-on-one meeting? What gets settled? And hopefully the world is going to be watching all of this, and should, by the way, we should be watching this. The Russian government has placed themselves alongside, allied themselves with the Chinese government and with the Syrians. Now, the Syrians don't pose any threat to us until something becomes better with them. And, until their government and they get their economy going again. But I think that this is something that all of us should be watching very, very closely. And I think we will be. Going to talk about online learning in a moment. How has COVID-19 changed the way our students learn? And we're going to talk finances and education. There's a lot of stories about education that you need to be aware of. And will your children have an online option in the next school year? All that's coming up in a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks again for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the show. Let's talk for a moment about education. Arizona schools continue to offer online classes. Is this going to be a positive change? Elementary school families who enroll at Flagstaff Unified School District this fall will have a new learning option, virtual live instruction. The option from the Flagstaff Online Academy didn't exist a few months ago. So Flagstaff Public School Districts, charter schools across America are preparing for a range of online learning options for the fall, from a remote version of their regular curriculum to an entirely standalone virtual school. Is this a good thing? And I think this is the wave of the future. I think that we are seeing that this may be an option for some families, maybe not all. And I think the majority of kids suffered from the lack of socialization that was happening. I think that it was very detrimental to a lot of kids, and it was detrimental to their education. We aren't going to know the details of how bad the shutdown was for kids until we get into next school year and we start doing the assessments on kids and their learning and progress. But there were some kids that thrived online. When my oldest was in high school, she went to an online academy to finish high school. and absolutely excelled at it. She was more disciplined when she was by herself and doing those things. It's just different for a lot of other people, but I do think that these options are going to be options that people will be looking at for the long term, and I don't think that it's a bad option. Here is a story about school boards that I thought was very odd. This is from the Arizona Republic. School boards question safety of in-person meetings as tensions rise. What does the law say? And it talks about attorneys saying reverting to online is a reasonable interpretation of Arizona's open meeting law, but some parents have expressed concerns over transparency and whether access to elected officials is being stifled. I find this to be completely hysterical. There have been parents that were upset about masks. Do you wear them? Do you not wear them? Now there's the questions about what they're teaching in curriculum. One of the things that I found very fascinating about in my criticism of the teachers union or teachers organization here in Arizona, and I've always tried to be clear that I have the utmost respect for teachers. I really do. I have some teachers that I consider to be very close friends. And I admire them. But we also understand that when there is an agenda of trying to create a union, that takes precedent over other things sometimes. That's been my disagreement with teachers' organizations. So when the teacher organizations here, AEA, AEU, when they wanted to keep the schools shut down, they have kind of opened up a Pandora's box because parents that were on lockdown as well got to see what their kids are learning. Parents are paying closer attention to the curriculum in high schools and in elementary schools and middle schools. They're looking at what their kids are learning, and they want a say in it. They want a larger say in what teachers are telling their children. They've heard teachers say things that were completely out of line. I'm not talking about even the majority of teachers, but enough that it's been concerning to parents. You start looking at critical race theory and all the emotional programs and all of these other things that are out there that parents are beginning to say, what does this have to do with teaching my kid to read, to write? And it doesn't. It's more of an indoctrination. Whether you agree with the indoctrination or not, that's not what the schools are for in the minds of many parents. So these school board meetings, parents have been starting to attend. How does anybody say it's a bad thing? One of the complaints we've heard from educators for a long time is lack of parental involvement, that the schools cannot control everything a child does. When they're sent home with homework, when they're told to study, they can't force them to do that. That parents must be more involved in their kids' education. Well, now you got it. Now you're hearing them say that they may shut down school board meetings because they're dangerous. I want to take you back to something. The city of Phoenix has been having meetings for a long time about what to do about the police. And the Defund the Police movement overtakes these meetings all the time. All the time. And you get a couple of minutes to speak. And when people would stand up to speak in favor of and in defense of the police agencies in town, I'm going to say specifically Phoenix, these people would get loud and rowdy and yell mic check and talk over you so you couldn't speak for those 2 minutes. And they did get contentious. The police had to take people out or order people out of those rooms. And what, we're going to go all virtual at the city council level? No. Or is this, again, another excuse by people not to be transparent or not to face people face to face? Yes, people are going to get upset, and I'm not justifying it, but people are going to get out of line. It happens all too often, but we don't shut things down because of it. So when school boards go on virtual, people are concerned about the open meeting laws, access to elected officials, and I don't envy school board members. It's a tough job to do, but parents should have more of a say and more knowledge of what is being taught to their children. If you don't believe that, you're in the wrong profession as a teacher, because ultimately the parents are responsible for that child until that child is 18. But then the rest of us are subject to what you're filling their heads with. So a parent has every right to know exactly what's in a curriculum, exactly how it's going to be taught, and what the teachers are saying. And what they've opened up this whole thing about, or they've opened it up by shutting down the schools and going to online learning, where moms and dads are at home during the workday now, and they're watching their children do online learning. There was one teacher, I believe it was locally, One parent that was furious that they were using rap music in a lesson plan that was using vile language about women and about and the sexual content was over the top. And parents were saying, what in the world is this? Why? And then, of course, the rebuttal about, well, your kids are already listening to this and they already know these words. But parents now want to play a bigger role in the education of their children. Maybe this is the wake-up call for parents that they need to know more about what their children are learning in schools. So do I think online learning is a good thing? In many cases, it is. And I think it's here to stay. But at the same time, if you're not confined in a classroom, you're doing this when you're at home, the parents may be listening. And no teacher should have a problem with that. As a matter of fact, teachers should welcome that interaction with the parents. Coming up in the next hour, of course, at 11:20, we do Did You Hear This? It's the way we catch you up on the biggest news stories of the day. That happens at 11:20. But just after 11 o'clock, is Arizona falling behind when it comes to vaccinations? Where do we stand on vaccinations? It's a fascinating conversation about where we are and where we need to be. It'll happen in a moment.